Israeli forces raid a Palestinian refugee camp in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, injuring dozens and razing a home. Lawyers of former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan say he has challenged his conviction on graft charges in the High Court. Plus, leading global rating agency Moody's downgrades the credit ratings of 10 U.S. banks. Welcome to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story this hour takes us to the Palestinian-occupied territories, where Israeli forces have raided the Asghar refugee camp in Nablus in the occupied West Bank. They clashed with Palestinians there, injuring dozens. Troops also raised the home of a Hamas member who carried out a retaliatory operation against Israeli settlers back in February. Our correspondent Rimala Mona Kandil brings us more.
Forces surrounded the home of Palestinian martyr Abdel Fattah Kharwashi, 49-year-old, who was shot and killed by the Israeli forces in an operation in Jenin back in March. As you have mentioned, Abdel Fattah Kharwashi had carried out an anti-Israeli operation at the Hawara or near the Hawara military checkpoint in Hawara, northern the occupied West Bank, back in February, on the 26th of February. This operation led to the killing of two Israeli settlers. At that time, he succeeded to fled the scene, but later the Israeli forces knew that he was in Jenin. In an operation, an exchange of fire led to the killing of Abdel Fattah Kharwashi, a member of the Hamas movement. The Israeli authorities decided to destroy his home as well as the home of his son, because the Israeli authorities said that his son helped him to carry out the operation that led to the killing of the two Israeli settlers. Since the beginning of this year, we are speaking about the demolition of 13 homes owned by Palestinian martyrs or Palestinian prisoners, or even families of martyrs and prisoners whom the Israeli troops accused that they carried out operations led to the killing of Israeli forces or Israeli settlers.
In the Iranian capital, Tehran, representatives of different faiths, as well as researchers, have discussed different aspects of blasphemy, including the Quran desecration incidents in Sweden. Gisu Misha Ahmadi brings us more.
A panel discussion dubbed systematic hate speech in violation of the right of freedom of expression by the Swedish government, with a special focus on the recent Quran desecration incidents, discussed what they refer to as government-sponsored acts of blasphemy. The participants included representatives of different monotheistic faiths, as well as scholars and researchers who unanimously denounced the acts of desecration in Sweden as a violation of human rights and the right to freedom of thought, belief, and religion.
The Quran burning incident in Sweden is completely unacceptable. However, we should not forget that without a government support, this would not have happened. They claim to be supporting the right of freedom of expression, but let's not forget that freedom can never be absolute. There are always boundaries, and you are free to do what you want, only if it does not undermine other people's freedom.
This was not just a desecration of the Holy Book of Muslims. In the Holy Quran, the name of God has been repeated many times. The God that we too believe in, as well as the name of our prophet Moses. Burning such a book is simply barbaric. If you disagree with an ideology or a religious belief, you should state your thoughts and your logic and discuss with the scholars. Such acts show that the person who did it and those who supported his actions are incapable of doing so.
I believe that a panel discussion just like the one we had today has to be held on an international level.
It is essential for people worldwide to share their opinion, because such acts of blasphemy are carried out because of ignorance. Also, we have to adhere to moral values no matter what we believe in, and any person in their right mind agrees that it is against all moral standards to insult other people and their beliefs.
That is why all the participants say the recent acts of blasphemy have brought the true colors of countries that claim to be advocates of human rights to light.
Back in July, and after the Quran burning incidents in Sweden, a deeply divided UN Human Rights Council passed a controversial resolution urging countries to address, prevent, and prosecute acts of religious hatred. The resolution was passed with 28 countries voting for, 12 countries voting against, and 7 abstaining. Interestingly enough, the U.S. and the EU strongly opposed this resolution, proving once again that concepts such as human rights and freedom of expression are merely political tools at the hands of these countries. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan has launched legal challenges against his conviction and arrest on corruption charges. Khan's lawyers have filed a petition in the Islamabad High Court to challenge his sentence issued over the weekend. Lawyers have also lamented that the former premier's situation in prison, saying he's languishing in poor conditions.
Khan told me that he'd been provided with no facilities. There's no air conditioning, which as a former prime minister he should be entitled to. There's only a fan and the washroom is open and the shower is not working. During the day there are lots of flies and at night there are various insects. It rained at night and the water seeped into the barrack. He was put in a small room where it is difficult for him to pray.
Panjutha also said that Khan doesn't have access to a mobile phone. The former premier was sentenced to 3 years in prison for illegally selling state gifts during his tenure from 2018 to 2022. Following the court order, he was arrested in the city of Lahore and transferred to a jail near the capital, Islamabad. Khan has been at the heart of political unrest in Pakistan since he was removed from power in a vote of no confidence in parliament. Earlier, we talked to our correspondent, Islamabad, Kamran Yusuf, about Imran Khan's graft charges. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
Khan's lawyer believes that judgment was biased. The judge was premeditated in his verdict. Therefore, that judgment should be set aside. This is one of the series of cases that Imran Khan has been facing since his ouster in April last year through a vote of no confidence. And of course, that given Pakistan's history, there is an element of political victimization, I should say, because many people feel that since Imran Khan had fallen out with the country's powerful military, that's when his trouble began. So that is why I think the number of cases filed against former Prime Minister Imran Khan feel like that these are politically motivated charges. But certainly there are other cases where the government and his political opponents feel that there are genuine reasons to believe that Imran Khan should be tried.
A leading global provider of credit ratings, Moody's, has lowered credit ratings of several U.S. banks over mounting profitability pressures on financial institutions. The agency says in a statement that it has cut the ratings of 10 small and mid-sized U.S. banks by one notch and placed some banking giants on review for potential downgrades. The agency has also changed its outlook to negative for several major lenders, warning that the asset risk is rising for these lenders. Moody's says that rising funding costs and declining income metrics will lead to the reduction in the bank's profitability. Now, this comes days after the American ratings agency Fitch downgraded the U.S. government's AAA credit rating by one notch. That's amid concerns over the state of the country's finances and its debt burden. Moving on to other news this hour, Russia says its forces have struck a Ukrainian military command post in the eastern Ukrainian region of Porovsk. The announcement by the Russian Defense Ministry came after Ukrainian officials said a Russian missile attack had destroyed civilian buildings in Pokrovsk. Officials said the missile attack on Monday night killed at least 7 people, including rescuers, and wounded scores of others. Pokrov sits just 40 kilometers from the front line where Moscow is advancing against Ukrainian forces. Kiev began its own long-awaited counteroffensive on the eastern and southern fronts back in June, but it has made only modest advances in the face of resistance from Russian forces.
Two days of peace negotiations aimed at bringing an end to the conflict in Ukraine has ended without any major breakthrough in the Saudi city of Jeddah. The only achievement of the talks was what the participants said, agreeing on the importance of continuing consultations to pave the way for peace in Ukraine. European officials said those taking part plan to establish working groups to address specific problems raised by the war. More than 40 countries, including China, India, the United States, and the European countries, were taking part in negotiations, but Russia was not invited. In an address to participants, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky said his country's delegation was pushing a 10-point peace formula which calls on the full withdrawal of Russian troops from Ukrainian territory. The peace plan also calls for the restoration of Ukraine's borders and the territory of Crimea.
In total, 42 countries are represented there, different continents, different political approaches to global affairs, but all are united by the priority of international law, and that is why Ukraine proposed the peace formula, because the rules-based international order, which was violated by Russian aggression, must be restored.
Head of Ukraine delegation Andriy Yermak hailed the negotiations, saying we had very productive consultations on the key principles on which a just and lasting peace should be built. Yermak said different viewpoints emerged during the talks in Saudi Arabia, calling them an extremely honest, open conversation. Russia, however, saw Saudi talks as West's effort to mobilize the global South to support President Zelensky's peace plan, saying such efforts are doomed to failure. Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov says the West, with its usual sly and deceitful manner, is trying to induce some countries to support Zelensky's position. Moscow had earlier described the event as a farcical move intended to forge an anti-Russia coalition.
Well, the peace negotiations in Jeddah came as the situation of the Russia-Ukraine war has been deteriorating during the past several months, with the West being accused of supplying Ukraine with more advanced weapons.
The negotiations in Saudi Arabia comes as several countries attending the Jeddah event have been critical of Russia's absence in the talks. That includes Brazil, with head of its delegation, Celso Amorim, saying any real negotiation must include all parties, including Russia. Amorim said, if we really want peace, we have to involve Moscow in this process in some form. France questioned the length of negotiations in Jeddah, saying long-term efforts are needed to reach sustainable peace in Ukraine. This is while now 18 months into the Russia-Ukraine conflict, any prospect of direct peace talks between Kiev and Moscow appears remote. But apart from deep differences between Russia and Ukraine, which have kept the two warring sides away from reaching a solution to the conflict, what has made things even worse is the West's all-out military and financial support for Kiev. Despite Russia's repeated warnings that such military assistance would only prolong the war, Western countries have left no stone unturned to provide Kiev with military aid packages worth tens of billions of dollars. Not to mention that such an assistance not only have failed to prevent the conflict from getting exacerbated, but instead has led to even more escalation on both sides. But the supply of military aids to Ukraine has its own opponents in the West. In a recent protest in German capital Berlin, the demonstrators warned of more deaths in Ukraine as a result of Western military support for Kiev.
Delivery of weapons only means death in Ukraine. Thereby, this is only prolonging the war and suffering of the civilian population.
We have to prevent it in advance and not prevent it when it's already happening. It should have been prevented before the first shots came. It should have been prevented before the escalation was built on interested parties. Now it's difficult. The hatred is very big on both sides.
The supply of weapons to Ukraine comes as the United States, the largest donor of military aid to Ukraine, has provided more than $46 billion since the war began in February 2022. Meanwhile, the European Union has so far provided nearly $30 billion in military assistance to Ukraine for the war with Russia. Putting all those Western aids into context, what seems to be terrifying is that the Russian-Ukraine war has the potentiality to turn into a global conflict. But in case of such a scenario, the catastrophic consequences of the conflict will be without a doubt hard to imagine.
Natural disasters triggered by climate change are wreaking havoc across the world. In Europe, Portugal is the latest country to suffer following a string of wildfires in Greece, Italy, Spain, and Switzerland. The flames have so far scorched thousands of hectares of land and forced the evacuation of 1,400 people in Portugal. In Asia, deadly flooding is now affecting Vietnam and Nepal. Over the past 4 days, floods and landslides have killed 9 people in Vietnam and at least 1 person in Nepal. Deadly climate catastrophes have also hit China, Russia, Canada, and Australia over the past weeks. Now, these are besides the fires that have consumed large swaths of land in several African countries, including in Algeria. Last month, the UN chief reacted to the incidents, describing the consequences of climate change as terrifying. And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., federal prosecutors have asked the judge overseeing former President Donald Trump's election interference case to bar him from publicly disclosing some of the evidence gathered during their investigation. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The Justice Department has asked the federal judge overseeing the criminal case against former President Donald Trump in Washington to step in after he released a post online that appeared to promise revenge on anyone who goes after him. Prosecutors on Friday, 4th of August, requested that the U.S. District Court Judge Tanya Chutkan issue a protective order concerning evidence in the case. A day after Donald Trump pleaded not guilty to charges of trying to overturn his 2020 election defeat and block the peaceful transition of power. The order, different from a gag order, would limit what information Donald Trump and his legal team could share publicly about the case, brought by special counsel Jack Smith. District Judge Tanya Chutkan on Saturday gave Donald Trump's legal team until 5 p.m. on Monday to respond to the government's request. Trump's legal team, which has indicated he would look to slow the case down despite prosecutors' pledge of a speedy trial, then filed a request to extend the response deadline to Thursday and to hold a hearing on the matter, saying it needed more time for discussion. District Judge Tanya Chutkan swiftly denied that extension request on Saturday evening, reaffirming that Donald Trump must abide by Monday's deadline. Protective orders are common in criminal cases, but prosecutors say it's particularly important in this case because Donald Trump has posted on social media about witnesses, judges, attorneys, and others associated with legal matters pending against him. Prosecutors pointed specifically to a post on Donald Trump's Truth Social platform from early Friday, 4th of August, in which Trump wrote, in all capital letters, "If you go after me, I'm coming after you." Prosecutors said they're ready to hand over a substantial amount of evidence, much of which includes sensitive and confidential information, to Trump's legal team. They told the judge that if Donald Trump were to begin posting about grand jury transcripts or other evidence provided by the Justice Department, it could have a harmful, chilling effect on witnesses or adversely affect the fair administration of justice in this case. The protective order, proposed by the prosecutors, seeks to prevent Donald Trump and his lawyers from disclosing materials provided by the government to anyone other than people on his legal team, possible witnesses, the witnesses' lawyers, and others approved by the court. It would put stricter limits on sensitive materials, which would include grand jury witness testimony and materials obtained through sealed search warrants. A Trump spokesperson said in an email statement that the former president's post is the definition of political speech and was made in response to dishonest special interest groups and super PACs. District Judge Tanya Chutkan, a former assistant public defender nominated to the bench by President Barack Obama, has been one of the toughest punishers of rioters who stormed the Capitol on 6th of January 2021, fueled by Donald Trump's baseless claims of a stolen election. The indictment, unsealed this past week, accuses Donald Trump of brazenly conspiring with allies to spread falsehoods and concoct schemes intended to overturn his election loss to Democrat Joe Biden. The indictment chronicles how Donald Trump and his allies in what special counsel Jack Smith described as an attack on a bedrock function of the U.S. government repeatedly lied about the results in the 2 months after he lost the election and pressured his vice president Mike Pence and state election officials to take action to help him cling on to power. Donald Trump faces charges including conspiracy to defraud the United States and conspiracy to obstruct Congress's certification of Joe Biden's electoral victory. National broadcaster NBC News has also covered the same story. Federal prosecutors on Friday, 4th of August, asked the judge overseeing former President Donald Trump's election interference case to bar him from publicly disclosing some of the evidence gathered during their investigation. In a court filing, attorneys with the special counsel Jack Smith's office requested that U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan ensure that sensitive materials are used by Trump's defense team for only the trial, and that the former president view the materials in the presence of his lawyers. All the proposed order seeks to prevent is the improper dissemination or use of discovery materials, including to the public, they wrote. Such a restriction is particularly important in this case because the defendant has previously issued public statements on social media platforms regarding witnesses, judges, attorneys, and others associated with legal matters pending against him. Donald Trump, who was arraigned on Thursday, 3rd of August, on charges that included conspiracy to defraud the United States, pleaded not guilty and has publicly condemned the allegations against him. Prosecutors went on to say that Donald Trump had written multiple posts that mentioned or implied the case, including one that appeared on his Truth Social page on Friday afternoon that read, "If you go after me, I'm coming after you." Donald Trump's use of details or grand jury transcripts obtained in discovery could have a harmful, chilling effect on witnesses or adversely affect the fair administration of justice in this case, the prosecutors argued. In a statement early on Saturday, 5th of August, a Trump spokesperson said, "The Truth Social post cited in is the definition of political speech, and that it was in response to the Rhino, China-loving, dishonest special interest groups and super PACs." During Thursday's court hearing, Magistrate Judge Moxilla Upadhyaya gave Donald Trump a warning that is not typically issued to defendants at arraignments. The magistrate judge said, "Finally, sir, I want to remind you that it is a crime to try to influence a juror or to threaten or attempt to bribe a witness or any other person who may have information about your case, or to retaliate against anyone for providing information about your case to the prosecution, or to otherwise obstruct the administration of justice." District Judge Tanya Chutkan has ordered Trump's attorneys to respond to the government's motion for a protective order stating their position on the matter by 5 p.m. on Monday. They are expected to respond much like in the other cases in which Donald Trump has been indicted.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Was salatu was salamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently paying attention to the first sermon of Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he has elaborated certain points with regards to the Islamic belief system. And one of the points that he elaborates in this sermon is to do with the issue of prophethood. And the discussion that we have been having is the fact that in this sermon, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that the aims and objectives of the prophets have been achieved. That means that the prophets have never failed in achieving their objectives. They themselves haven't done things that would cause them to fail, nor have the events around them forced them not to be able to achieve their objectives. And this being the case, you might ask that some of the prophets were killed, some of them are martyred, some of them are were subjugated, some of them were confined, some of them were imprisoned. So how do you claim that the prophets achieved their objectives even though they were under so much pressure? We dealt with that question in the last session, but we'll complete that inshallah in the session that we are having today.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha, especially in this first sermon, when talking about the aims and objectives of the prophets and whether they have achieved their aims, he says that they definitely have. رُسُلٌ لَا تُقَصِّرُ بِهِمْ قِلَّةُ عَدَدِهِمْ وَلَا كَثْرَةُ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ لَهُمْ. That the messengers are such that they have not been caused to fail. They have not been limited by the lack of people, by the lack of numbers in their followers, nor the amount of beliers, nor the amount of people who said that they lied, or nor the enemies. The sheer amount of enemies could say that they have, you know, they have failed in their objectives. So neither the internal weaknesses nor the external threats have caused that path of prophethood to not be achieved. This being the case, Imam Ali alayhi salam is making a very important historical claim, and that is that each and every prophet and each and every messenger basically has played that complete role for the final puzzle of monotheism to be formed. In other words, no prophet that came to this world has left the world or has left that nation which he was supposed to be in without causing a mark, a permanent mark, that together with all the other efforts of the other messengers and prophets will finally culminate into the final, manifestation of the issue of Tawheed in the universe and on this earth. And you can see that even today, with all the problems that, with all the, you can say, forgery that has happened on the Bible, and the version of Christianity that we have, at least according to us as Muslims, has been manipulated, yet we still claim that the aims of Nabi Isa alayhi salam have been fulfilled.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, how do you make such a claim that the aims of Nabi Isa alayhi salam have been fulfilled? It is because the fact that even though the Bible and the Old Testament and the New Testament have been to a certain degree forged by some wicked-minded people in history. And although we claim that, still there are certain teachings that have remained to be pristine in these books. And still we as Muslims can prove many realities about the oneness of God, about the prophethood, about the teachings of the rulings of Islam through the present Bible that is present in front of the New Testament and the Old Testament. And that those true parts of the Old Testament and the New Testament and other holy books, those parts that are true, that have been saved, are strong enough for that final, progression into the society, the whole human society, to achieve monotheism and to achieve true servitude towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Small wonder it is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran also says that you will find the most loving people towards the Muslims to be the Christians. You will find that. Why? Because there are certain teachings in Christianity that have still remained to be pure with regards to, you can say, kindness, love, humility, okay, sacrifice. All of these teachings have remained. They have been actually the teachings of Jesus alayhi salam. Throughout history they have stayed, and these are actually creating an imprint in the hearts of the people, whether we like it or not. And this will finally, inshallah, when the 12th Holy Imam, ajallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, will come and present the true Islam to the public and to the people of the world. I can say the perfect form of Islam, because the Islam that is there today even is true. But the perfected form, inshallah, that will be in the hands of the 12th Imam, when he will present it, we will see a large group of people who are followers of the prophets of God will definitely be part of this mission. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the hasty reappearance of the 12th Holy Imam and for the completion of the missions of the prophets and messengers. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
More than 100 top medical journals, researchers have collectively warned about the looming nuclear threat to the world. Researchers say the threat of a nuclear catastrophe is great and growing under the current global political environment. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. More than 100 global medical journals have called for urgent action to eliminate nuclear weapons as the threat of a global nuclear catastrophe was great and growing. An editorial published on Thursday, 3rd of August, in numerous medical journals called on health professionals worldwide to alert citizens and leaders about the major danger to public health posed by nuclear weapons. The editorial, co-authored by the editors of 11 leading medical journals, including the British Medical Journal, The Lancet, the JAMA, and the New England Journal of Medicine, said, "The danger is great and growing. The nuclear-armed states must eliminate their nuclear arsenals before they eliminate us." Chris Zelinsky of the World Association of Medical Editors said, "It was an extraordinary development that the competing journals had joined forces." He said in a statement, "The fact that all of these leading journals have agreed to publish the same editorial underlines the extreme urgency of the current nuclear crisis." Citing previous research, the editorial warned, "Even a limited nuclear war involving only 250 of the 13,000 nuclear weapons in the world could kill 120 million people outright and cause global climate disruption, leading to a nuclear famine, putting 2 billion people at risk." Ira Helfand, the former president of the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War and a co-author of the editorial, said, "We are facing an extraordinarily dangerous moment where the possibility of nuclear war is very real." Pointing to Dmitry Medvedev's recent comment, where the former Russian president said his country will be forced to use a nuclear weapon if Ukraine succeeds in its ongoing counteroffensive to tear off part of the Russian territory, Ira Helfand said, "We don't know if the threats are real or if they're just put forward to scare people, but I think we have to take them very seriously." The Slate, a US-based online magazine, has also covered the same story. While Russia and North Korea are being blamed for nuclear threats, the United States for 2023 allocated $813.3 billion for its defense budget, with a nearly $60 billion increase from previous year. In this huge defense budget, An enormous share of $50.9 billion has been allocated to nuclear weapons, recording a 17% increase over $43.2 billion, which was allocated in 2022. About a third of this outlay is for the Energy Department's nuclear complex, including its weapons laboratory, plutonium pits, and the production and testing of warheads and bombs. Being the first country to use nuclear weapons, the United States dropped the world's first atomic bomb on the Japanese city of Hiroshima on 6 of August 1945, destroying the city and killing 140,000 innocent people. It dropped a second atomic bomb just 3 days later on the city of Nagasaki, killing another 17,000 people. The country has reportedly spread its nuclear arsenal in several countries across Europe, including in Italy, Germany, Turkey, Belgium, and the Netherlands. In a bid to replace its nuclear weapons system, the United Kingdom is also set to spend approximately £172 billion from 2019 through to 2070. The 2023 Integrated Review Refresh, a government review that covers foreign policy, defence and international issues, has confirmed that an additional £5 billion will be provided to the Ministry of Defence, the MOD, over the next 2 years to help replenish and bolster vital ammunition stocks and modernise Britain's nuclear enterprise. In the Integrated Review of 2021, the government declared that the United Kingdom will now move towards an overall nuclear weapons stockpile of approximately 260 warheads, with an increase of over 40% from its previous nuclear stockpile. It is important to mention that London has been the largest provider of military support to Kiev in its war against Moscow. Russia's Itatas news agency has also covered the same story. Konstantin Vorontsov, deputy director of the Russian Foreign Ministry's Department for Non-Proliferation of Arms Control, said recently, "The West's military support for Ukraine risks escalation of the conflict, which may bring about a direct confrontation of nuclear nations with disastrous consequences for the world." The Russian diplomat added, "The West is becoming increasingly more determined to pursue the course of an open confrontation with Russia, which has resulted in the crisis around Ukraine." The Russian diplomat emphasized, "Statements about the need to defeat us on the battlefield and strategically pumping the Kiev regime with weapons, including advanced missile systems, providing intelligence and earmarking military and civilian targets that we defend, the direct involvement of Western advisers and mercenaries in hostilities, leading to the deaths of Russian soldiers and Russian officers as well as civilians, all this brings the West extremely close to becoming a party to an armed conflict with our country." Konstantin Vorontsov added, "This is likely to escalate all the way up to direct military clash of nuclear powers with all the ensuing disastrous consequences." Vorontsov stressed, "We consider this policy irresponsible and destructive. It seems that the United States and other NATO countries have come to believe that they can fully control the escalation that they are triggering and manage it without the damage to themselves. But this is an extremely dangerous illusion." China's Xinhua news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. A Chinese military spokesperson recently refuted remarks by some U.S. military officials to hype up the so-called Chinese nuclear threat and bullying behavior, saying the United States is the biggest nuclear threat to the international community and the one that undermines the rules-based international order. Wu Qian, spokesman for the Ministry for China's Ministry of National Defense, said, "The U.S. officials ignore the facts and engage in groundless speculation for the purpose of justifying the development of the United States' own nuclear forces, as well as maintaining and strengthening its global hegemony." Wu Qian added, "It is known to all that the United States has the largest nuclear arsenal in the world." He added, "To ensure its absolute security and military superiority, the United States has pulled itself out of several international treaties on arms control and non-proliferation, consistently pushed the deployment of anti-missile systems worldwide, sought to deploy land-based intermediate-range missiles in Europe and Asia-Pacific region, and formed the Cold War-like cliques through multiple ways." Wu Qian, spokesman for China's Ministry of National Defense, warned that such move has increased the risk of nuclear confrontation or even a nuclear war, posing a serious threat to international security. Wu Qian said it is both unfair and unsustainable to try to build one's security on the security of others. He reiterated China's self-defense nuclear strategy and its commitment to a nuclear policy of no first use of nuclear weapons at any time and under any circumstances, and not using or threatening to use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear weapon states or nuclear weapon-free zones unconditionally. He said the United States is a globally recognized rule-breaker when it comes to the rules-based international order, and it is the least qualified to blame other countries in terms of international law and international rules.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from Imam Ali alayhi salam. And this hadith is about greed As you know, we are in the month of Muharram. This is a very sad and solemn month for all of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt and all of Muslims in general, as well as all of the freedom-loving people of this world. Because as you know, Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his choicest of companions and some of his closest kin folk were martyred and brutally murdered on the plains of Karbala in this month. And it all stemmed from, again, greed, the greed of the caliph of the time, his greed for power and greed for money and wealth. For this, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners on this most sad and solemn occasion. In denouncing greed, Imam Ali alayhi salam said the following: greed is the terminal source of distress. And he also said, greed stains one's gallantry. And again, in the same vein, he said, greed is the mount of pains. Perhaps it might be better to translate this word into the English equivalent, covetousness, instead of greed. But one could also translate it as greed. In denouncing the greedy people, Imam Ali alayhi salam said, the greedy is a captive of a lowliness whose captivity is never ending. And when he was asked, which is the worst form of humility? Imam Ali alayhi salam said, coveting the world and being greedy for the world. And Imam Ali alayhi salam again, he said, the greedy person is poor, even if he owns the whole world, the entire world. Even if he owns the entire world, he will still feel greedy. He will still feel that inner sense of greed and poverty. And he said, and the reason for this is alluded to in another hadith, in which Imam Ali alayhi salam was recorded as having said, the greedy person is never satisfied. Al-harisu la yaktafi. The greedy person, the covetous person, is never satisfied. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam also said, self-restraint does not prevent the descent of sustenance, nor does greed attract any surplus sustenance. For indeed, sustenance is allotted, and death is certain, and greed is only asking for sin. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the sin of greed in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, reiterated years ago that the era of hit-and-run policies by hegemonic forces are over. He said, if you hit Iran, you will be hit back. Now, this statement has been reiterated by Iranian military officials as 3,000 U.S. military personnel have arrived in the Red Sea area. Tensions have been heightened as the U.S. has confiscated Iranian oil and its tankers. Iran, in turn, took a tanker headed for a U.S. oil company in the Persian Gulf and says it will stop more tankers if Washington continues to facilitate pirates and confiscate Iranian oil.